As a business owner, it's important to keep your business connected. Spectrum Business is committed to keeping your business online whenever and wherever you need us, all backed by the Spectrum Commitment. Get fast, reliable internet starting at $40 per month when bundled, or level up your internet speed and get a 3-year price guarantee. Learn how Spectrum Business can help your business stay connected at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line, plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus Tax, for limited time and subject to change. Max one offer per account.
The Rich Zeoli Show podcast is sponsored by Mike Venaria Jr. with Ausperity Private Wealth.
Hi, I'm Mike Venaria Jr., Wealth Management Specialist. Make your retirement dreams a reality by creating your retirement plan today. Call me at 856-252-0107.
Glad you're here. Our 5 o'clock happy hour brought to you by the Grand Hotel of Cape May, New Jersey. Do you have Memorial Day plans yet? If you don't, what are you waiting for? Book your Memorial Day stay today at my happy place, the Grand Hotel of Cape May, New Jersey. We'll be there for our next live show on June 20th, and you can make your June stay. Midweek stays are great because you get reward points, and you can use those reward points for all kinds of great things at the Grand Hotel. GrandHotelCapeMay.com. Okay, so there's a big New York Times Magazine story about ADHD, by the way, which I started reading today, and then I got distracted and stopped reading it. But essentially going on about how overprescribed and how overdiagnosed ADHD is. It's not that it's not real. It's that it's just overprescribed, and it's just a situation where there's just – it becomes the first line of dealing with kids who are – out of control. And the experts are admitting kind of something we've probably suspected for a long time, which is we probably overprescribe medication, particularly to children in this country, to deal with things because we refuse to acknowledge other factors that may be making them disruptive in class or fidgety in class or distracted in class. Because in my opinion, we're still dealing with a very outdated model of teaching, which is kids in their desks, sitting down hours on end. And we treat every child the same. Not every kid learns the same way. Certainly, like for me, for example, as an adult, when I finally am able to use my foot again, which, knock on wood, on Thursday, I have my next follow-up appointment. Hopefully by then they'll take another x-ray and they say I can put pressure on my foot. That'd be great. And then I can start walking on it again. But not everybody... So I like to use standing desks. That's how I like to work. I would rather be standing right now doing the show. And as soon as I'm out of this boot, or at least I can put pressure on it, I will be standing again doing the show. I'm looking forward to that since I haven't been able to do that since December. But joining us now is a man who knows all too well the power of standing desks. I don't know what that means. Dr. Wilfred Riley, the author of Lies My Liberal Teacher Told Me, the man himself, joins us on Talk Radio 1210 WPHD. How are you today, Professor?
Good to be back on the show.
Good to have you. I was just talking about ADHD and this New York Times Magazine story about it. Have you had a chance to peruse that?
Yeah. And I think it's something that most intelligent people that are parents of boys or that have worked with young men or something like that were already aware of. I mean, what they say, if you read between the lines or even just what they say in paragraph 4, is that a lot of ADHD diagnoses are basically just nonsense and woo. I mean, you actually apparently can track some mental conditions in the brain, but that's not how they're diagnosed. I mean, the way an ADHD diagnosis happens for a young man, it's just you go into the doctor there's a list of like 8 symptoms from, do you rapidly move your feet and legs, to have you been in a fight? Easily about 75% of young males could be diagnosed with this disease. And the New York Times is saying, well, a lot of this stuff that the psychologists told us in the 70s and 80s doesn't seem to be true. We now know that SSRIs mess up your body. For women, they often mess up your libido. They don't seem to prevent depression. We're as depressed as we were 20 years ago. The whole dopamine pathway theory of depression, it's a social science. It's not just go on with this, but it is wrong. That's been confirmed wrong in major papers. Transgender identity. I mean, we now know there are curves for men and women, but there aren't any like cute girly brains that men can have. I mean, female scientists don't have male brains. So we're talking about this with ADHD, and it appears the whole thing was just a way of diagnosing smart, aggressive men early in life. And you can have some theories about that when you look at, you know, post-feminist theory and psychology and so on. But yeah, I agree with the piece. Like, you should be very reluctant to give some of these drugs to kids. Something like Provigil is not as bad, but Adderall is just amphetamine. The side of the bottle says amphetamine and salts, which is about 2/3 the way to what we call methamphetamine. And those are the only ingredients. So yeah, it's I think it's good to see that piece. It was surprising.
It was surprising. And, you know, I've long said that I think a lot of the problem is how we teach. And you have kids sitting behind desks all day long. We teach every kid the same. We don't figure out some people learn better if they're listening. Some people learn better if they're reading. I mean, everybody's kind of one size fits all. That's part of the problem, too. But there's also this idea of, again, we just go with the experts, right? So you take your kid to a doctor, and the doctor says, it's probably ADHD. Let me write you a script for Ritalin or Adderall, whatever it is that they give to kids these days. And because we've become a society accustomed to listening to experts, many parents, not me, my family's not doing this, fortunately, but we'll turn around and say, okay, we'll just give Johnny some Ritalin or Adderall, whatever it is. But what's interesting about this piece is that it's the experts who at one point were advocating all this, who are now decades later saying, whoa, we may have had this wrong. But it does say a lot about the fact that we live in an expert culture, where if a doctor says something and says a pill is the answer, most people are likely to say, well, he knows best, so I'm going to take his word for it, and I'll swallow the pill, or I'll give the pill to my kids.
Well, I think one thing that's worth understanding here about the experts, and to some extent, or even we are experts. I mean, you have a significant role in journalism. I'm an academic professor. I mean, so when you say an expert, you're just talking about a guy in a jacket to some extent. I mean, and that's important to remember for the average sort of upper middle class parent, it's important to remember that you might be a medical doctor, you might be a lawyer, something like that. And you're going in to see someone who is, say, a life coach or a therapist. You should certainly give them a 5% degree of additional respect for their field. But is this person going to be able to say things from a national and IQ and social class perspective that you couldn't? I mean, often no. So what you see in these fields, like, there are basic things like cognitive behavioral therapy works that the field has confirmed over and over and over again, and we call these reliable and valid findings. And it helps sometimes to go to therapy maybe 3 times as a stressed businessman and learn all of those reliable techniques. But a lot of the other stuff that we talk about in the academy, it's sort of new rising young people testing theories from an older generation that themselves were only tested once. There's really no evidence for a lot of this stuff. And that's why if you watch the media, it can become very easy to be confused about what the experts think. And this is almost a cliche in kind of dinner party conversation, right? Like, 1 week they say wine is good, and then it's bad, and then it's coffee, and
right. You know,
pass me both of them. You know, it's not really, it's there in the background. But the reality is there is a big study that said wine is good. Up to 3 glasses a day is good for you. All my Hispanic and Italian friends were overjoyed. Then the next study comes out and says, you know, drinking at any level, it's not sustainable. What's the truth? The truth is probably in between. You can have 2 glasses a day. Neither study was well designed. I've looked at both of them. But that's constant across fields. And it's important because when someone, I guess my point here would be, rely on common sense if you yourself are at that taxpayer level of citizen. You know, if someone's talking to you and they're saying some boys are born with girl brains, and when a boy has a girl brain, what you want to do is cut off his penis so that he can feel like a girl, there's a good logical reason to look at that and say, no, I think you might be crazy rather than my kid. You know, they just have a unique style of dress. And it's yeah. absolutely the same with ADHD. It's absolutely the same with a lot of this stuff. It's even the last thing, but like sex addiction, yeah. all these different diseases. I mean, shopping addiction, people are saying they can't control pornography use, gambling, this kind of thing. I mean, I strongly suspect that most of these guys, if you gave them a financial incentive or just threatened to leave if you're in a relationship with them, they'd find a way to overcome this non-physical condition. So all of this, it's a block of stuff in the social sciences. It's been confirmed once or twice. It may well not be true. Treat it with the same analytical judgment you'd use for anything, I suppose.
I think it's true, but a lot of this comes from the government, right? Dr. Wilfred Riley, I mean, as a political scientist, you're acutely aware of how much the government has gotten involved in telling us what we should and should not put in our bodies and how wrong they've been on that, the food pyramid being a great example. You bring up alcohol. They're now looking to potentially put out a new guidance on alcohol that says no amount of alcohol is okay. That coming from the government, from the FDA or whoever. Now, I don't know if the new people in there under Kennedy's regime will do that or not. I have no idea. But that's where we were leading up until that point. I don't know where it stands as of this moment. But you've had other people out there like Andrew Huberman, very popular podcaster, a professor of ophthalmology and neurobiology, who says no amount of alcohol is good for you whatsoever. If the government comes out and puts that guidance out, then maybe people will stop drinking. But then again, if the red wine is good for you, maybe then they're not getting the health benefits of that. There's another aspect of this, too, which you could argue maybe they should put the guidance out, but they won't because the big alcohol industry will pressure them, because we've seen that with food before, with big food, big pharma. We talk about these things, but they are very, very real. So I guess the point is that for a lot of people, we don't know where to go to get really good advice on things, because so much of the advice that's given has been wrong.
Yeah, I think that's correct. Again, when we look at a lot of this stuff, unless something has been continuously validated over a period of decades, it doesn't really mean much. Just saying I have a peer-reviewed journal article, that doesn't really mean anything. I mean, my understanding of the alcohol debate is that it depends what you're looking at. Like, if you're looking at overall physical plus mental health, having a relaxant 3 times a week and going upstairs to hang out with your spouse or relaxing, watching the game, that's obviously going to make you feel better. Heart's going to be positively affected, so on. If you're just looking at the pure physical effects of the drug, not effects on well-being, intimacy, comfort, anything like that, then I assume that alcohol is probably damaging to the fatty tissue of the liver or something. So it all depends, first of all, what your, we would say, dependent variable is. And even there, there's what's called the replication crisis in psychology and political science, where I would virtually guarantee the alcohol has no health benefits finding. If you isolated out red wine or draft beer, that would not be true. So you have to confirm that twice, and then you have to overcome the other finding about mental health. My own reaction would just be, again, a commonsensical one. If you drink some of the time, but you're not a drunk, that probably has a slight positive impact on your social life, marital life, so on. If you drink too much, that's a negative impact. And also, again, you've got to understand the effect of drinking. If you say overall in the drinkers cohort, we found a negative effect, have you separated out the people by how much they drink? Like, there are all these questions of study design. So if you have a guy who drinks 10 beers, of course, that's going to negatively impact athleticism, muscle density, all kinds of other things. A guy who drinks 2 beers after a marathon, I mean, no effect or a positive effect. So again, you have to look at all that. I don't think that people generally do. The best scientists in the world, without mockery, generally don't go work for the government as opposed to working in consulting or working in big private universities. So often they're just wrong, or they're relying on other people's findings. The food pyramid, which you mentioned, is kind of the classic example of that. I mean, where people were very, first of all, the people that designed that were very specifically influenced by the lobbies for milk, mm-hmm. big bread, desserts. Corn. I mean, like some element of dessert, as I recall, suggested the food pyramid. So it's not the best way to be healthy. It was considered to be kind of a good version of the American diet that was then available. And now we do know what the best way to be healthy is. And it looks nothing like that. It's small meals and all that, a lot of meat.
Now, let's turn to pronouns for a second, shall we? Because last week, Bernie Sanders, Anderson Cooper, had a situation where Anderson Cooper addressed a woman who then corrected him on his pronouns. I'm going to play the clip in just a second. But I want to tie that in with Stephen A. Smith, who's now saying he may run for president. I said this on Fox News yesterday. I said the problem for a guy like Stephen A. Smith is that he probably would run as a Democrat. And the Democrat Party is still obsessed with people's pronouns and correcting them on that. And I don't see a guy like Stephen A. Smith playing that game. And this is, it's also interesting to think about Gavin Newsom, who's now with his podcast trying to understand bro culture, as they put it in the New York Times, bro culture, and try to pivot a little bit. What do you make of where these guys are? And like, first of all, Stephen A. Smith, if he were to run for president, what kind of a candidate do you imagine he'd be? Would he be a Democrat, I'm guessing?
Yeah, Stephen A., I mean, he is a black, upper-middle-class Southerner, went to Winston-Salem State, played some basketball there. Yeah, he's 90% running as a Democrat. Again, all of this is just a distraction, obviously. I mean, Stephen A. Smith is not going to win more than 5% of the vote in any state in the Democratic primary. So one piece of advice, because I have a lot of young, ambitious friends that were, say, naval officers or something, and that are getting back and thinking about politics. If you want to run for office, run for state senate and win. All these guys keep saying, I'm going to be president of the United States. It's like back in the day where they used to make those sort of hip hop joking movies and Redman and Method Man would go to college, but the college was Harvard. I mean, it would be a lot more realistic if the college were Brooklyn Tech, you know, and it's the same thing here. Like you've got to do something where you have a chance of success. So Stephen A. Smith is not ever going to get elected from any political party. He's the guy on ESPN who rates LeBron ahead of Jordan. I mean, he's just an intelligent guy in the discourse. But if he ran as a Democrat, yeah, he would run into these issues. This is one of the big issues, of course, with party politics in the first place. Like, a lot of people from Gavin Newsom to Sean Hannity just strike me as enjoyable guys. If you're working on a trading floor or something, you'd have a beer with them. Once you're in that party, though, you have to toe the party line if you want to advance. That's what it is. There are two political parties. I generally vote for the conservative party. So whatever your wife's take on abortion or something like that, if you're a Republican from a red state, you're going to say X. And the Democrats have a lot more things X that they have to say. And one of them is pretending men can be women virtually at will. And yeah, I don't know if Stephen A. or even Gavin, when you get them out there and they keep hearing this, I mean, I think there's going to be a lot of impatience with this drivel. There's going to be a lot of backlash to it. But unless you can play the game well enough to keep 20% of your own side on side, I mean, you're going to lose that election.
So
you
here's
saw this
the
with Cory Booker recently.
Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, no, sorry, my fault. But like you saw this with Cory Booker recently, where, I mean, Cory Booker was like a defensive tackle for Stanford. I mean, he's fairly friendly with Riley Gaines. Like, I would bet $1,000 what he would actually say if you went to a barbecue at his house. But Cory Booker spoke to the New Jersey Rainbow Coalition or something. It's the LGBT group in New Jersey. And the first person to speak, you can find this video for those watching on Zoom. You can find this video by Googling, like,
Matt,
man.
Can you pull it up from yesterday, Matt?
Yeah, just give me one second. I'll have it ready.
Sure. In the meantime, because I know exactly what you're talking about, and we're going to play that in just a second. Let me play you the moment from Anderson Cooper and Bernie Sanders, the they-them moment. Take a listen to this.
Paul, we're back with Senator Bernie Sanders. I want to introduce Grace Thomas. She's a local civil rights attorney. She's a Democrat, Grace.
They-them pronouns, actually. Thank you. Good evening, Senator Sanders.
Snarky, right? But her question goes on about how the Democrat Party has a problem with white men. That's the reason why the Democrat Party has a problem with white men, because people like you correct them on saying the wrong pronoun.
Yeah, that's kind of too on the nose. Like, you couldn't make it up. And you're seeing more and more of these moments. And I don't want to pick on the feminists who I enjoy sparring with online, but they provide a very disproportionate number of them, where the like reasonably attractive early middle age business woman stands up. She's clearly female, looks very representative as a woman of her class and time. And Anderson Cooper says, miss, let's hear your question. Exactly what you'd say. And she says, it's they, them. But I mean, like, what? There's right. obviously no attempt to transition into anything there. That just literally means I'm bisexual or I identify as non-binary. And this kind of pretentious nonsense is happening a lot. And it's combined with attitudes toward things that would destroy modern feminism within 10 years if left unchecked. I mean, crime policy, migration policy from the third world, migration policy from the Islamic world. So, yeah, that's a living illustration of the issue with white men, and in fact, with all men. And as a very simple point, I think that both political parties should keep this in mind with whites and men. That's coming up on the margins. People aren't going to like you if you act like you hate them. Right. So, I mean, if there are online campaigns like "For Be Feminism" or "Kill All Men," sure, we can argue that men commit slightly more domestic violence in the real world or something, but that's a tiny percentage of men. Like, when you look at content media, you regularly see, like, the Washington Post running articles that say things like, the real problem with this country is masculinity, or the real problem with this country is whiteness. There, even now with the crazy alt-right, there's no equivalent on the other side. And as long as that goes on, as long as you could start off a date by someone saying, they, them, don't make that mistake again, you're going to have a lot of irritation and a lot of backlash. And that's perfectly understandable.
Reminds me of what James Carville said about all these Karens out there telling you to eat your peas and put down the cheeseburger. And he was talking about white, liberal, college-educated women being the problem for the Democrats. And I think that woman is just the embodiment of it. But here's the video of Cory Booker at that rainbow event that you're talking about. This is the give me a hug. Can I get a hug? Which is, first of all, I don't know why a grown man needs to hug another grown man unless they're like doing like a bro hug. But anyway, this is the clip. Let's take a watch and take a listen.
I have a question about LGBTQ rights, because as you know, we get attacked like every time a fascist government comes in. They say they're protecting kids, but it's not about the kids. We can't even live our truth, because me going out every single day as who I am puts me in danger. So my question, Senator, to you is, what are we going to do about protecting LGBTQ rights and trans rights for those who don't have a voice that can speak up? This is not a costume. This is who I am, and I am not about to let him tell me who I am.
Thank you for coming. So first of all, can I have a hug? Yes.
What is that? Dr. Riley, yeah, what is that? Can I have a hug?
This stuff is so embarrassing. I mean, and again, like, Cory Booker is a perfectly normal guy. I mean, he's too far to the left for an adult man. But I mean, like, again, I have friends that have talked to Cory Booker at public events in D.C. and so on. I believe I've met Mr. Booker once.
I've talked to Cory Booker. He wasn't always like this. He ran for mayor of Newark. Everybody, the Republicans were all behind the guy because he was a school choice advocate at one point. This is definitely not.
That's exactly right. He's a fairly normal guy. That's literally what I was going to say. I don't love him, but he's a regular dude. Gavin Newsom's a ruthless, predatory businessman who used to date Kimberly Guilfoyle, Trump's current partner. I mean, none of these guys actually believe this horse bleep. You know, so what's going on there? Part of the Democratic... This goes back to, like, Roy Teixeira, the emerging Democratic majority. Part of the Democratic outreach agenda right now is looping together everyone who feels oppressed in kind of one coalition against the guys in the jackets. And that means saying a lot of things that most people who are Hillary Clinton, who are Cory Booker, just these boring executive types, know are absolutely crazy. The trans thing comes up a lot, not because people are brutes or bullies, but just because it's the most open example of that. Like, the start of that clip, you know, that clip was called something like, "I speak as a woman." It was shared on Twitter. I was able to look at the original source code for it. And you look at that and you see this male with like a New Jersey hood accent who's trying to talk through that to sound like a lady, saying, "This is not a costume. This is who I am. I'm going in your daughter's bathroom." And Booker is looking at this person, and you know what he thinks, but he goes over and gives him a hug, because he's not bro hugging now. He's hugging a lady. So he hugs the poor girl while she cries. I mean, this, you can either accept that there's a new civil rights movement going on and that the people involved are illegal aliens, criminals, trans folks, maybe, what's the term, minor attracted persons, so on. Or you can say none of these people, unlike Jews or middle class blacks or something, are normal citizens. Like, no, I'm not doing this. This is just complete nonsense. I'm just catering to people's delusions. But the Democrats haven't done that yet.
And if they don't, they're never going to win. I mean, that's the bottom line. They're never going to win. So then, as the author of the book Lies My Liberal Teacher Told Me, How much of this is coming from the indoctrination of our schools? Because, I mean, obviously there's a culture out there that these people are playing to. I mean, like the Bud Light former executive, Alyssa Schneiderface, whatever it is, Schneiderhell, she's now with Live Golf. She was the one who said the Bud Light Friday culture. I mean, obviously, it's either in primary K through 12 school, or it's in colleges, or it's both, where this indoctrination is happening, where all these people feel there's all this oppression, and then there's a political party that's seizing upon that. Is that where this is coming from? Because, I mean, it's not just coming from thin air, is it?
Yeah, a lot of it has to come from what we're telling kids. I mean, so I've talked with religious people. I don't have a problem with Catholic Church, obviously, or even the Buddhists or something like that. But I mean, all of them will say, not quite this bluntly, but we want to get our entire philosophy out to kids early on. Not like the stuff that's probably true, like there's some kind of higher being at some level, but also the stuff like Noah put all the animals on his ark. You want to build those stories in people's minds early on so they become part of your society and part of your culture. And a problem with this is that it turns out that any kind of, I won't say fairy tale for the great religions, but any kind of legend can be taught to someone who's six. And so that's also when gender ideology begins, right? Like you have the, what is it, the gender unicorn, where like the brain with the horn over it is sexed, and the genitals, which are a weird thing to show a kid, but are sexed in a different way. And you just use this sort of plush toy animal. You can buy a stuffed gender unicorn to show kids your nonsense theory. And then this goes on throughout all of education. I mean, the things I used in Lies My Liberal Teacher Told Me, I mean, the curriculum on Indians with all those incredible quotes, every rock has a soul kind of stuff. I mean, that was from the U.S., I believe, Department of Agriculture's recommended curriculum for the high schools on Native Americans. So, you know, there was no word for war, peace was everywhere. Like, all of that is formally taught to people. And the idea would then be that the whites, and maybe my ancestors to a lesser degree, kind of came along from the dirty old world and, you know, conquered paradise and shot the birds out of the sky. So, you know, yes, we are one of the few countries to teach propaganda to our children that's not positive. So you have two options. One is just teaching the truth. Like, yeah, the whites and the natives are both brutal warriors by our standards. Now do your math homework. That's point one. But point two is, you know, Plymouth Rock, right? Like you look at a picture of the site and you hear about the first Thanksgiving where, you know, Powhatan's deadly warriors and, you know, John Smith's people who were no joke themselves. They all put down their weapons, which of course didn't happen really, put them on their backs, but they all ate food together and the Indians brought the first deer and the whites taught them how to grow corn. Whoever did what? You know, you can either teach positive propaganda or reality. We're teaching negative propaganda. The country began in 1619 with black slavery. The North, mm-hmm. too? Yes. You know, that's a really bizarre thing to be doing. And of course it has effects.
That's a great point. That's a really great point. That's why we have you on the show. Thank you, Dr. Riley. Always a pleasure chatting with you. It's amazing how fast the time goes, but it's always fun. So I look forward to doing it again very soon. In the meantime, get his book, Lies My Liberal Teacher Told Me. Thanks, Doc.
Same to you. Have a good one.
It's the 5 o'clock happy hour on the Rich Zeoli Show. Brought to you by the Oceanfront Grand Hotel of Cape May, New Jersey. A premier full-service resort and conference center. GrandHotelCapeMay.com.
Let's talk about Emmons Roofing and Siding, your go-to contractor. I've been using them for over 10 years in two different homes, our old house and our new house. And I love the great work of Emmons, and you will too. Not only will they make your home great again, it's going to be more beautiful from the curb and ready to withstand the elements. And each and every one of my listeners gets 10% off, a 10% off inflation relief discount. That's what you get with Emmons Roofing and Siding. They even have a bathroom remodeling division, and they remodeled the bathroom in her old house, did a fantastic job. It looks great. My wife was happy and thrilled, so that's why you should use Emmons. They serve our whole region, Pennsylvania, New Jersey, Delaware, and the Jersey Shore. They'll give you a free roof inspection. They'll never tell you you need a new roof if you don't, but if you do, you're going to get a lifetime warranty on that roof with the best in the business, Owens Corning Shingle. So whether it's new windows that really will help provide more energy efficiency and insulation, siding to keep your home nice and warm and tight, or that roof that you definitely need, 10% off inflation relief discount for each and every one of my listeners. Just go to emmonsroofing.com, E-M-M-O-N-S, emmonsroofing.com.
The Rich Zeoli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
We get the best start to the day because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
Harvard funding has been frozen. $2.2 billion of it. I say good. That's a great start. Why are any of these schools getting federal funds anyway? We'll talk about that as well as the show goes on with our guest, our friend Susan Crabtree. She is investigative reporter, national political correspondent at Real Clear Politics, and author of the book Fool's Gold, The Radicals, Con Artists, and Traitors Who Killed the California Dream and Now Threaten Us All. Hello, my friend. How are you today, Susan Crabtree?
Doing great, Rich. Great to be with you again.
Start about talking about cutting up PBS and NPR with the president of the United States now using the impoundment power that he has as president to take away these funds. I say good riddance to NPR and PBS. They're propaganda machines. I asked my son today, who's 10 on tax day, as I told him, taxation's theft. And I said to him, do you ever watch PBS? He didn't even know what PBS is. So there's no reason to have these government-funded entities at this point, Susan Crabtree, in my opinion. Do you agree?
Well, I had been on NPR one time, and they actually were going to pay me to go on.
Wow.
Why did they have, I mean, that's very, it's almost unheard of anymore in journalism to pay, have your guests get paid to be on. And I thought, okay, well, that's nice. That was the reason why I was doing it. I like the topic, but I got in there and I walked out of there furious because I was completely bombarded. It was not an even-handed, I can't remember what the subject matter was, but it was just completely skewed. And I thought to myself, why are they having the ability if they're constantly begging Congress for money, more money, and for their own viewers, listeners, for more money? Why are they paying their guests on top of that to just roll out this, you know, very skewed, liberal biased news?
And they are biased. And we know that from what that NPR guy came forward and said. They're very biased. And I think also there's more than enough competition out there. I'm just trying to figure out all the streaming services and what I'm paying for and figuring out what shows on what streaming service to watch. And it's confusing. We don't even need these things anymore. And as a guy who gets paid to talk and has to make sure my sponsors live up, get customers, I'm tired of this idea of the government paying one of my competitors, which is NPR. There's an NPR station in this city. It's boring as hell. Every NPR station's boring. But we have to actually provide an experience so that people will listen to the show and then support our advertisers. Why am I competing with a national public radio local affiliate in the city of Philadelphia? That's not fair to the private sector, nor is it necessary in this day and age. So I'm glad we agree on that point.
Absolutely. Even SNL, it makes fun of NPR for how yeah. bland it is.
Yeah, the meatball recipe, right? And the sweaty balls.
Exactly. That was this hilarious skit because it's so boring that they have to inject some funny sexual innuendos into it to make it more lively and funny.
You have a piece, A Tale of Sanctuary Cities. Let's talk about that for a second as we're broadcasting from the sanctuary city of Philadelphia, though it really has been kind of flying under the radar recently. Tell us about the two sanctuary cities you highlighted.
Well, yes, last week, Donald Trump did one of his, you know, he had an impromptu tweet. It seemed like it wasn't, I don't know if there was a lot of thought or policy that was, you know, put into it. But he said, no more sanctuary cities on Truth Social. He posted, you know, that it is just harboring criminals and he was going to basically defund any city or state in California. We have both that has this policy of providing sanctuary and not cooperating, having their local authorities, police cooperate with immigration and customs enforcement at the federal level. So I was sort of trying to figure out what the reaction was going to be, because this was a long going fight, as you know, between California, especially, and Donald Trump. They actually won California. The state fought him on this during the first term, his first term in office, and California won. So I wanted to see if they were had any fighting words this time around, because, as you know, when they were, you know, basically trying to battle the wildfires in L.A., up in Sacramento, they were passed $15 million of our taxpayer dollars and Californians to fight Donald Trump in court. They were passing that in the state legislature while the wildfire was going on, and while Gavin Newsom was begging Donald Trump for $40 billion for disaster relief to help rebuild. So I checked in with the Chicago officials and Illinois officials, J.B. Pritzker, the governor there, who has his eyes on the White House, as well as Newsom. He was basically just going on offense and saying, we're going to fight this tooth and nail. And so was Chicago Mayor Brandon Johnson, even though his poll numbers are in the tank. He too was really aggressive and saying, you know, we're definitely going to not going to take this. We're not going to change our policies. And they had a lot of money, Chicago does, headed their way to help build out an area of their subway system. So that certainly was going to get denied if Trump follows through with his word. But, you know, California was treading far more carefully because they need that $40 billion and is yet to come their way. It wasn't in the big, beautiful bill that the House and Senate were passing just recently. So it's still hanging in the balance. And I think that obviously Governor Newsom, who has his hat in hand and is trying to tread carefully when it comes to Donald Trump right now, he's not going on offense like he did just days after the election, declaring him basically the resistance to Donald Trump. It was interesting to see how carefully they were wording their responses.
I did also notice, you know, they had that that story in the New York Times the other day about Gavin Newsom embracing bro culture on his podcast, and you know, he's waking up to the idea that there's masculinity in America and everything like this. I mean, this guy is such a fraud. I this is the analogy I used for Gavin Newsom the other day. He's the guy that invites you to lunch, pitches you a pyramid scheme, super charming, and then the minute the check comes, he has to go to the bathroom and leaves you with the bill. That's how I view Gavin Newsom, a total freaking con artist. And yet, I mean, there's no doubt in my mind this guy wants to run for president of the United States. And, you know, among Democrats out there, he comes across at least as one of the more sane ones. But that's not saying a lot because the whole bus is filled with crazy people. But I did notice recently he came out and he said that California is open for business and will be. It's almost like he's trying to negotiate with countries to do business in California in spite of Trump, which is an interesting strategy that he's employing right there. And also maybe possibly illegal. I don't know if a governor can engage in foreign policy. But anyway, what do you make of of his embrace of bro culture, Susan Crabtree?
Well, that was interesting in that New York Times article that they were saying that his own 13-year-old son was a fan of Charlie Kirk and really wanted to be there for the podcast when he was interviewing Charlie Kirk, which has just got to be really unsettling for both his wife and him and Gavin Newsom himself, because Jennifer Siebel Newsom, as we've talked about before, she has these things called gender justice films. This is her big project as first partner. She calls herself first partner, not first lady of California, as a nod to the LGBTQ plus community that they align themselves with quite frequently. So this idea, her films are focused on the fact that we are placing gender and in terms of, especially when it comes to men and boys, we are putting this on them, this masculinity, and that there's a film called Misrepresentation, and another one is called The Mask You Wear. So it's like we are putting this as a society onto both women and girls and boys, these gender roles that they're not comfortable with. So the fact that his own son likes Charlie Kirk and is embracing the bro culture is quite hilarious to me, because it goes against everything both of them stand for.
Susan Crabtree is with me, investigative journalist, Real Clear Politics. You tweeted out the other day that there is a new video for the Secret Service, a recruitment video. We've talked a lot about the Secret Service. We're still waiting for updates on Butler. We're still waiting for updates on a lot of things regarding this. You've talked about the morale problem in the Secret Service a lot. You've broken some news on that recently. Where do things stand right now with the United States Secret Service and their vital mission to protect the president of the United States of America?
Well, I honestly don't think we really know, because one thing we do know is that they're hemorrhaging agents. I was told that it's hundreds, maybe up to 700 agents that have applied to lateral moves to the Drug Enforcement Agency in recent weeks, because the Drug Enforcement Agency just opened up four lateral moves themselves up. So they announced that on Twitter as well, on X. So this is deeply concerning. So they have to do something at the Secret Service. So that's why they're issuing another recruitment video. As you remember, they just had one that they spent $2 million on hiring a Hollywood producer, a very famous Hollywood producer. And that was criticized within the Secret Service. You know, why are you using $2 million to put out this recruitment video when actually it's the policies themselves and the fact that the agents are stretched so thin and the morale problems and the fact that we're not seeing any kind of reform since the assassination attempts. And as we've talked about before, the DEI hires from the previous administration, those priorities are still seem to be alive and well. Now, we don't know if Sean Curran, the new Secret Service director under Donald Trump, if we don't know if he's making any changes, and I've been begging them for information about that. What are you doing about DEI? There's supposed to be no DEI across the agencies anymore. They fired all their DEI officials or put them on administrative leave. But yet the recent promotions that the Secret Service issued had, from what my sources are saying, were just fulfilling the same sort of DEI agenda from the previous administration and Director Cheadle, who supported all those priorities. So, you know, what is training? What is changing at the Secret Service? And are they improving their training? And are they responding to these two assassination attempts? How are they doing so? You know, we see these lighthearted, very heartwarming moments with DJ Daniels, the youngster who survived cancer, the young man, 13-year-old, I believe, who they were given at the Joint Address to Congress, Trump's honorary membership in the Secret Service. And that was just darling and very heartwarming. But, you know, what change are we seeing inside? No one has been fired or disciplined. The announcements haven't been made about the disciplinary action that's been taken against the agents that were responsible for not putting someone on the roof where Thomas Crooks, the would-be assassin, shot, nearly killed Donald Trump.
No one? You're saying no one has been in trouble? Not a single person?
Well, there's this big debate. What I've heard from my sources is that the Pittsburgh field office is going to take the fall. And they had recommended disciplinary action. The Secret Service lawyers have put that out, and their lawyers representing the agents are fighting it. So that process, but they're, according to the Congressional Review and Investigations and the Independent Review Board findings, there were people on the Donald Trump detail, two individuals, in fact, the person inside of the site agent, a woman, and her supervisor, a male agent, were responsible for not putting that person on the roof, according to the findings of the Independent Review Board that are experts in Department of Homeland Security experts, or, you know, bipartisan review board. So those people aren't going to face any problems whatsoever, is what I'm hearing, that they're allowed. In fact, one of them is now in charge of the Eric and Laura Trump detail. That's the supervisor who didn't question why there was no one on that roof. This is according to the reports that have been issued after official investigation. So I think it's high time. I think it's been more than 8 months since the assassination attempt. I think it's high time that the Secret Service shows that they are taking action and to improve the training. And it would actually improve morale within the Secret Service if the right people get disciplined. If they don't, if certain people get off scot-free and other people that aren't directly responsible get disciplined, it's going to be a huge problem, because it's just continuing the pattern of uneven discipline. Some people are favored in the Secret Service and some people aren't. And it depends on who you know. And it's been like this for decades since I've been covering it. And I don't think that's going to do much for morale in the Secret Service if they do that. But if they even-handedly provide some discipline, even if people don't get fired, but they have to take maybe a cut back in one of their promotions, or if they have to take some leave, anything that shows that they're taking action at the leadership level, and that there's a sheriff in town that Donald Trump is deeply concerned about his personal safety and that of his family and those of the people that participate in his rallies, you know. And I think, you know, the Secret Service desperately needs to show action, and they haven't so far. They haven't.
Well, I hope they do. I hope they step up. Susan Crabtree, always a pleasure. Grab a copy of her book today and learn the truth about Gavin Newsom like no one else has exposed before. Fool's gold. Thank you, my friend. Have a great rest of your day.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me, Rich.
The Rich Zeoli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
All right, so much to get to. Chicken Jockey. I took my son. I've seen that they're talking about that on the fire right now. Chicken Jockey. This is a line from Minecraft. My 10-year-old son loved that line, Chicken Jockey. And then everybody went crazy in the theater when they said Chicken Jockey during Minecraft. I don't even know really what it came from. But also in the scene when he said, I am Steve, everybody in the theater lost it. So these kids today, I don't know. But as a father of a 10-year-old, I can tell you, I can confirm the Chicken Jockey thing is very, very real. So if you're a parent or grandparent and you got a young kid and he's talking about Chicken Jockeys, that's where it comes from. The Minecraft movie, which has made a ton of cash, unlike a lot of other movies out there. It's made a ton of cash. That's because it's from a game. And so people know that, and then they go see it. Apparently, these new original movies that they're coming out with, which are not that original in the first place, not doing so hot. Not doing so hot. All right, we got into a lot more. Slashing Harvard's budget. Good, excellent, great. Take that money away. What the president said about China. I'll get all that into you. And what the Amish are doing regarding stoves. Yes, in the wake of the trade war, how the Amish are handling that. Let's talk about it straight ahead. The big story of the hour brought to you by our buddy, Dr. Mike Venaria, VenariaDentals.com. Go see him today for your perfect smile. If you've been putting off getting that second opinion for complicated dental work, stop putting it off and go see Dr. Mike today, VenariaDental.com. And all this spring, great news for your flowers and your lawn, all this weather, the rain we've been getting, but bad news if you've got any water problems on your backyard. The good news is Garden State Earthworks will take care of that for you and drain the water away. That's right. They will drain the water away once and for all, guaranteed. Natural Lawn of America. That's what they do. It's what they've done for me in two different homes. We had a wet basement in the old house, and I met Lou Vargo, and he promised me, he said, you'll never have another drop of water in that basement again. Sure enough, not another drop of water in that basement again. In this house, the backyard was like a swamp. Drain the water away and no problems. Call them today at 856-848-4444, 856-848-4444, or go to GardenStateEarthworks.com. It's the easiest number to remember, 856-848-4444. You do not want water problems causing problems to your swimming pool line, or getting into your basement, the foundation of your house, or any of those problems. Garden State Earthworks will take care of it for you. Guaranteed, they're super busy. You tell them I sent you, they'll make you a priority. 856-848-4444.
The Rich Zeoli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.